It's my very great honor and pleasure to be with all of you this evening. Special gratitude to Lalita, Piramal, and Ajay and Swati for bringing us together in this very beautiful place. As a Swami who has not had a bank account or signed a check since 1969, I'm not so familiar with the business world, but I've never seen an office like this. This is like the spiritual world. It's like the most beautiful ashram. But this really is the way things should be. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a principle that's spoken of, yukta vairagya. What is real vairagya or renunciation? Krishna tells renunciation is not about just not having things. It's about utilizing whatever we have for a high purpose. If we have something that can be utilized to benefit humanity, that can be utilized as an instrument of compassion for all beings, something that samsidhyat haritoshanam, that pleases our beloved Lord, then that is spiritual wealth. Bhagavad Gita teaches us the art of transforming the material world into the spiritual world through devotion, through love, through compassion. In this beautiful song that Gaurvani and Vishwambar sung and Brinda Devi and Naima Sharanya so sweetly danced, it's about transforming our hearts. This body is a temple of God. And that is a reality for everyone. True spirituality is to help people recognize that and use it for that purpose. In Mumbai, somewhere, is my old friend Gary. If any of you read this book, The Journey Home, we left Chicago area together in 1970. We were 19 years old for a summer vacation that we never came back. After about 20 years of not seeing each other, we met, not by plan, but by the inconceivable will of destiny. When we parted 2 decades before, we were both searchers for truth, quite confused about a lot of things, and rebelling against what we believed was hypocritical and superficial. When we met again, I had a shaved head, wearing the saffron robes of a Swami, and Gary was a champion bodybuilder whose profession was training people in the Malibu gym in California. So we had a lot to catch up on. And as we spoke about what happened in the 19 years since we met last, Gary looked at me and said, "I don't know how we can still be friends because we have nothing in common." He said, "My whole life is trying to teach people that if they have healthy, beautiful bodies, they will be happy. And your whole life is teaching people that they're not their body. What do we have in common? I remembered what my beloved guru, Srila Prabhupada, said in this regard, that the body is a temple of God, because God dwells within the heart of every living being. I said, you teach people how to keep their temple really nice, and I'll try to teach them what to do inside the temple. And we could be partners. And ever since then, we have been united, serving together. Yukta Vairagya is how to utilize the wonderful gifts of God and nature as offerings of love and compassion. The Bhagavad Gita tells, Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhradam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichchati. People in this world want freedom. And in freedom, there's peace. But what is the true nature of freedom and peace? The Gita says they can only be realized in a very deep and real way when we understand that everything is the property of the Supreme. And that everything is ultimately meant to be utilized in harmony with the proprietor, or God. And to have trust and faith that Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, is the most intimate, loving friend of all living beings. If we just understand and live by these principles, whatever the situation, we will be in peace. And more important is, in any situation, we could be instruments of peace. We can inspire quality happiness, a happiness that is not subjected to the temporary flickering changes of this world. True wealth, according to the Gita, and according to all the great scriptures of the world, is to understand the immortal treasure that is within each of our hearts. In the Bible, Jesus tells, what profiteth a man if he gains the whole world but loses his eternal soul? Because whatever treasures we make in this world will be rusted, eaten by moths, or stolen by thieves. By the power of time, everything is taken away inevitably. True wealth is that which is everlasting. And that is in all of us. But because of so many weapons of mass distraction that are coming upon us in this world, we have forgotten the real treasure within. And in that forgetfulness, we're trying to find it somewhere else. The evolution of humanity is when we love people and use things. But when we're disconnected from our own souls, then we're disconnected from God and we're disconnected from each other. And in that superficial, artificial state, we start to love things. And we use people to get them and keep them. That is not real life. The Gita tells, that however much pleasure we get through these things, it's like putting fuel on fire. The fire gets hotter and hotter and consumes more and is never satisfied. Real wealth is deep happiness. For parents, for your children, do you want them to be happy, or do you want them to have a lot of stuff? I guess that's a serious question. Because for a small child, their only happiness is when they feel loved, when they feel cared for. But somehow or other, as we get older, we become very complicated and we forget that basic principle that we are all seeking to love and be loved. And the wonderful gifts and treasures of this world, when they are used in harmony with that love and expressed through compassion, that is true wealth. That is real transformation. Just like this boat, Swati and Ajay and Lalita Devi, and Anand and Nandini and their families, they took an old coconut boat and transformed it into a beautiful temple. Their office, where they're doing whatever businesses may be, we see tonight is like the spiritual world, a place of illumination, a place where we're sharing spiritual joy. And that's true with all things. It is our potential. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, I'm the strength of the strong. I'm the intelligence of the intelligence. I'm the ability in men and women. My dear friend Shamsundar, who is sitting here, he was my Guru Maharaj's, Srila Prabhupada's, personal secretary for about 5 years. When he was living in London, he went there from California with nothing, knowing no one, with his wife and two other household couples. They didn't know where to live. They didn't know where to get anything to eat. And after a couple months, Shamsundar's best friend was George Harrison of the Beatles. So one day, they were living in a little flat, like a loft in London. George calls Shamsundar and says, we're renting out a recording studio, and John Lennon and Yoko Ono just got in an automobile accident. So they're going to be 3 hours late for the recording. So we have the studio. So bring your friends over and let's make a record chanting Hare Krishna. It's not too much time to rehearse. But as far as chanting Hare Krishna, they were rehearsing every day without knowing what it was really going to be for. So they got in their old pickup truck and jumped in the back of it and drove to the studio. And Paul McCartney of the Beatles was in the soundboard making the mixing. And they made a 45 RPM record of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and George Harrison was playing guitar. It was promoted by Apple Records. It was the number one record in 1969 for several weeks in many countries of Europe and London. Sometime later, they were living in John Lennon's house, and Prabhupada came And George approached Srila Prabhupada, our guru, because he was so deeply moved by these principles of bhakti. Because he had everything. In the 1960s, the Beatles were the most famous people in the Western world, maybe even in India. They were young, they were handsome, they were strong, they were incredibly wealthy. But with all that, George was a deep thinking person. He understood it was all hollow, it was all superficial. As long as there's greed and selfishness and egoism, arrogance, there can't be any real happiness in the heart. What is real wealth? He was asking this question because he had everything. And if he just looked beneath the thin veneer of the illusion, he felt empty. And he found an devotion to God, to Krishna, in a non-sectarian way, and understanding the essence of every religion and true spiritual path is to awaken that love that is within our hearts and to share that love in whatever we do. Shamsundar brought George to meet Prabhupada. And George said to Prabhupada, I would like your permission to shave my head, leave my home, and join the ashram. Prabhupada said, no, you're a wonderful musician. You have great fame. Use your talents to enlighten people. Use your wealth to enlighten people. Use your fame to enlighten people. This is a higher renunciation than just giving it all up and going to live in a cave. Remain where you are in what you're doing, but just add devotion, add compassion. And that's really the perfection of religion. That's the perfection of the Gita. Sarva dharman purityajya mamekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo mokshayi samimasaja. That when we surrender our hearts to the Supreme, there's no more fear. There's no more suffering. There's love, there's ananda, there's joy. And we do that by understanding that everything is God's property. Let me use everything I have in harmony with God's will. Aham bija pratapita. Krishna tells in Gita, I'm the father and the mother of every living being. Within this world, what pleases our mothers and fathers most? In my family, the thing that agitated my mother and father the most was when myself and my brothers would fight over things. And the things that pleased them the most is when we loved each other and shared things. When we understand the big family, that every living being is a child of God, to share and to care is what pleases our beloved mother and father, Shri Radha Govinda. George and the Beatles were just on the top of the world of success. But George said the greatest joy he ever had was when he saw Shamsundar and the devotees on Top of the Pops, which was the most popular BBC television show. After they made this record and they became very, very loved by the society, they were on this TV show sincerely, from their hearts, lovingly chanting this beautiful Maha Mantra, prayers to God. And George saw that and cried. He said, it was better than anything I ever did experienced with the Beatles, is seeing someone else enlightening society with this inner spiritual wealth. And just last year, there was a George Harrison Memorial Garden, and his wife, Olivia, inaugurated it, and the keynote speaker was the most famous gardener of the United Kingdom. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but he's on television, and he's like the authority of gardening. And people who want the best gardens, they either have him to develop it or get his counsel. And he spoke, and I heard that speech. What he said was really beautiful. He said, a garden that actually transforms people's hearts, the most beautiful and wonderful garden. Yes, we need to know how to use the proper fertilizers, and we have how to plant and what to plant and where to plant. But that is not going to make a beautiful garden. The only way to make a beautiful garden is when the gardener loves each flower, each plant, like his own or her own children. Because wherever there's growth, there's life. And wherever there's life, there's the presence of the soul, the Atma. To honor and respect life as sacred is true Dharma. To the degree we lose connection with our own soul, we can't perceive it in others. Real self-realization, real spirituality is not just fighting over whose religion is better than another's. True spirituality is to connect to the love of our souls, to God's love, and to see that sacred presence of God in others. And he was telling, in the plant, they are growing. They will grow with love. And if you garden with that loving feeling, then when people come to that garden, they will not just say, oh, this is beautiful. They will feel something that transforms their lives. And what will they feel? They will feel that love coming from the plants, the love that the gardener invested in the souls of those plants. Those plants will be blossoming their flowers in reciprocation of love. That's a true garden. That's beauty. There's a beautiful analogy that a great saint from South India named Anantacharya shared with his student. It's about a crane. A crane is a bird, white in color, with a long, sharp, pointed beak. The crane stands with one leg in a stream of water, looking down. So many little fish are swimming by. The crane lets them pass, patiently watches a dozen fish pass, 100 little fish, 1,000 little fish. And when a big fish comes, he eats it and feasts. Now, I don't eat fish, so why am I telling this story? Because cranes do eat fish. That's their dharma. But the principle very much applies to all of us. We should not become disturbed by little things. So many little things agitate us. So many little things disturb friendships, disturb marriages. So many little things disturb nations. Actually, it's just little things that create world wars. Because when we have a very, very empty heart, then little things, we're clinging to trying to find meaning and purpose in them. And those same little things can really create conflict and frustration. Anandamayobhyashat, the Vedanta Sutra tells that we're all seeking pleasure because that's the nature of the soul. The soul is satchit ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of happiness. When we keep our hearts and our minds and our lives focused on the really meaningful, important things in life, when we remain focused with the compass of wisdom on higher principles, then these little things don't disturb us anymore. We just let them pass. If we're not focused on the higher principles of life, then a grain of sand could look like a mountain to us. But if we're focused on the real mountain, then we see the grain of sand for what it is. So much of what we fight about, so much of what we are in, so much stress and anxiety about are just superficial little things. Tomorrow, we probably won't even remember it. What to speak of in our next life? What is meaningful? Nashito vidyate bhavo. That which gives true happiness. That which is eternal. Our children. What is the true wealth we can give them? Because after some time, we're all going to depart from our present bodies. And we're working so hard in our life. What do we want to give our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren? We want to give them a meaningful and happy life. And in order to do that, our example is really the wealth we're giving them. To earn with integrity, to spend with compassion, to understand how we are caretakers of sacred property in our knowledge, in our abilities, and in the property and wealth that we have. Thank you very much. And now Gauravani and Vishwambar will sing another song, and then I'll speak for a few more minutes. Gauravani and Vishwambar are in a band called the Hanu Men. I'd like to just say something about Hanuman before we hear from the Hanuman. On the same subject that we're discussing, Hanuman is the emblem of love and devotion. Sita is Lakshmi. She's the goddess of fortune. She's the presiding deity of all wealth and beauty and all the wonderful things of this world. Ravana stole Sita to enjoy for himself. Hanuman wanted to bring Sita back to be enjoyed by Ram. They were both fighting the same war. Hanuman had a club, Ravana had a club. Hanuman, as a great devotee of the Lord, he did not just become a sage and live in an ashram or in the Himalayas. He was active, he was dynamic, he had a purpose. He was willing to jump over oceans. He was willing to burn the whole city of Lanka. He was willing to fight, but not for himself, but for his true self, not for his ego self. He was giving honor and respect to Sita. Ravana was trying to exploit Sita. Within all of us, whether we're monks or brahmacharis or sadhus, or whether we're in banking or agriculture or infotech or whatever, or business, we all have the choice to either be like Ravana or be like Hanuman. All the beautiful things in this world are Sita's energy. Do we want to exploit, or do we want to honor, to respect, and to use with compassion? Through their music, the Hanuman are trying to, with their incredible musical skills, share this message with the world. In every continent, and perhaps soon to include Antarctica. But in my opinion, just your singing and thinking about those seals and penguins in Antarctica, they are being benefited from. The beautiful holy names of the Lord and prayers of a sincere heart are beyond geographical limitations, beyond time. Now we will hear the Hanuman. I have known these gentlemen since they're little babies. They're like flowers in the garden of their families. They were nourished with the water of love. Parents who raised them with such integrity, with such compassion. Now they're such beautifully blossomed flowers that are spreading the sweetest fragrance of their own sincere devotion to the whole world. So proud and so grateful to see. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that of months, I am Magh. because that is the month of harvest, when grains are collected in great abundance. Why does Krishna say that is the best of months? Because it provides the most benefit, not only to humanity, but to all living beings, the harvest time. In other words, what pleases Krishna most is what gives the greatest benefit to all Krishna's children. And in that same verse, Ritunam Kushumakara, he says, of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring. The best of all seasons. In some places, I come from northern Illinois, near Chicago, and winter is really hard. About 4 months of bitter cold and snow and ice, and then the spring, where it becomes warm, and all the trees blossom, and all the flowers are growing. It's like a heavenly world. So everyone is very happy with flower-bearing spring. Vasant Panchami is a particular day when Krishna celebrates spring by having the Ras Lila. It's a time of growing. It's a time of even going through difficult periods. It's a time where we, through the whole process, we learn to blossom. In the Bhagavad Purana, there's a beautiful verse. Atapum bird vijastreshtas varna shrami vibhagasha. Shvanushtitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. Whatever our occupation, whatever our social status, our true success is how we please the Lord. The Bhagavad also tells that when you put water on the root of a tree, that water naturally reaches every part of the tree. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmanika vihastini. When we learn to love the all-beautiful, all-loving, supremely compassionate Lord who's full of grace, who's within all of us, then naturally that love extends to everyone. That is the highest, truest wealth, and the only wealth that can bring true happiness to the heart. Long ago, Mother Teresa, she personally told me that the greatest problem in the world is hunger. Not hunger of the belly, because if you give some people food, you could solve that problem. Hunger of the heart. And she said, I travel the world, and even the wealthiest, most powerful people, their hearts are starving. They're in poverty within. Because only God's love can satisfy the hunger of the heart. And only by sharing God's love with others, seva, service, in that spirit can make life truly meaningful. And anyone can do it. We don't have to change our location, we just have to change our values and our consciousness. Patram pushpam palam toyam. If one offers me with love, even a flower or a fruit or some water, I will accept it. Bhavagrahi Janardana. You see, God, whatever name we may call, we call Krishna, the all-attractive. He only accepts the love in which we offer something. Krishna doesn't see the thing. He sees the purpose and the spirit in which we use it. In this regard, there's a beautiful story. One time, Narada Muni, the great sage, came to Dwarka. And Krishna decided to go away with Narada Muni. But the people of Dwarka, they were heartbroken. They wanted Krishna to stay, and they were begging Narada Muni, please don't take Krishna away from us because he loves you so much and you love him so much. He'll go wherever you take him, wherever you want him to go. But how will we live without him? So it was agreed that we will give you, the queens of Dwarka said, the weight of Krishna in the most precious of jewels. And you take the jewels and we'll keep Krishna. So it was agreed. So they made a scale with two sides. And Krishna sat on one side. They brought incredible jewels, emeralds and diamonds and rubies and pearls. They put pounds and pounds and pounds, hundreds of pounds on one side of the scale, but Krishna didn't move. They brought more and more and more, their entire king's treasuries, but the scale didn't move. Then Rukmini came. Rukmini was Krishna's beloved consort. She said, remove all the jewels from the scale, which they did. And she collected one single tulsi leaf. And with love and devotion, she put that on the scale. And whoop, it weighed so much that Krishna catapulted up and practically fell off the scale when it was way, way up high near the sky. Now the jewels, there was hundreds and hundreds of pounds of the most precious jewels. My dear friend Shyam Sundar, for about four decades, he was one of the world's foremost miners as an explorer. He would explore where rare gems were in the Amazon and in Madagascar and in Siberia and so many places. And he was telling me that there's one ruby that's just 25 carats. That means a 5-gram ruby that today's value is $169 million, what? $169 million? Pounds? That's 1 gram. Oh, 5 grams. So how much was that worth that they put on? But it was worth nothing to Krishna. But a single leaf that's offered with love was worth so much. And my mother taught me this principle from my earliest childhood. It's not the thing that gives value to anyone's heart. It's the feeling in which it's offered. the beautiful festival we're celebrating today is a festival of love, a festival of simple, natural devotion, and what joy it can bring. The simple little flower petals, when we offer it to Krishna and then shower it upon each other, is a way that we can actually express, not only we're expressing our love for God and sharing that with each other. That's what this festival will be that we are about to celebrate. Swati and Ajay, they wanted all of us to participate and to experience this higher principle of the joy of the simplest, most natural, most beautiful things of life that are actually accessible to everyone. This Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The process of kirtan is simply to awaken that spirit of love, of service, of compassion, and to actually give us an entrance into the beauty of the eternal spiritual world, even while we're living in this world, in our own homes, in our own offices. Thank you very much. And I'll end by just sharing one beautiful treasure in my heart. We were speaking about Krishna's consort Rukmini. Well, Gaurvani's mother's name is Rukmini. And she showered upon him the flower of the Tulsi of her love since he was a little baby. And now he's doing so much. And your mother and father, they are so proud of him because of the wealth he has and how he's sharing it with the world. Rukmini happens to come from this same little village that I'm from in northern Illinois. So she's like a sister to me. And a few years ago in Pune, there was about 5,000 devotees gathered in an event like this. And Gaurvani mesmerized everyone with his kirtan for 4 days. And at the closing ceremony, we asked him to come up and say a few words. And with a very choked voice, he said, "Why don't you say it yourself?" But let me warn you, when he said it then, 5,000 people, that means there were 10,000 eyes weeping by the beautiful message that he shared with all of us. And I really felt it's a message that really encapsulates what's truly important in life.
I believe what I said was that there is nothing more powerful than the prayers, heartfelt prayers of a mother for her child. And that I had gone through so many difficulties, especially as a teenager, and that surely the only thing that protected me and carried me through was the prayers my mother made on my behalf. Something like that. Is that right, Maharaj?
It's so right. Thank you very much. So now he will share those loving prayers of his mother with all of us through his beautiful song.
Maharaj, please join.